Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, if you've ever been involved in the job of communicating, maybe for a business, a charity, or a church, chances are you've heard this expression. It goes something like this: our methods may change, but the message stays the same. Well, author Shane Hipps says that is a myth, and he's out to blow the myth apart. Shane used to work in the cutthroat industry of advertising, where he learnt that the very methods we use to communicate actually have a powerful influence on our culture and the way we think. He's written this fascinating book called Flickering Pixels, and he says we should be careful how we use technology because it even affects the most fundamental workings of our faith. Fascinating stuff. Shane Hipps is with us now. G'day, Shane. Welcome to Open House.
Hey, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your background first. It's quite an interesting journey you've had. You're the pastor of a Mennonite church now, but you were working in the advertising industry selling Porsches for a while.
Yeah. It's kind of a natural career progression here in the States. You usually try and start selling Porsches, and then that's how you become a pastor. That's kind of the...
selling religion.
Pretty standard stuff. It was whiplash, vocational, emotional whiplash. I was working in advertising. I was working mostly on the communications plan for Porsche cars in North America, and had a great time, was loving it, felt I was being rewarded, was climbing the ladder, was told I was doing well, and all was well until a series of events that are a longer story kind of collided in my heart and realized I probably wasn't doing what I was made for.
Mm.
And so I left and went to seminary. And but bottom line is, what I learned is that many of the skills that I was after while I was in advertising to help convince people that they needed to buy a particular product or service, a lot of those skills were about mastering the art of communication. And what I discovered is that the implications of those skills had far greater implications for people concerned with faith than they did only for people in my previous profession. So some of what I wrote about was the interplay or the intersection between communication and faith.
Yeah, fascinating. Now, one of the big epiphanies that you had about this whole notion of messages, communication, etc., how you do it, how you go about the art of persuasion, I guess, was one of Marshall McLuhan's famous books, and one of those famous phrases that even people who haven't studied advertising or communication or anything would probably even know of, and that phrase is his very well-known statement, "The medium is the message." Unpack that for us and what you discovered out of that.
McLuhan had this wonderfully poetic way of describing this whole thing. He says, essentially, what you use to communicate matters as much as what you're trying to communicate. Or, another way of saying it is, how you say something matters as much or more than what you say. Hmm. And intuitively, I think we all get that in kind of just basic relational sense. If I say, "I really like you," in a very sarcastic voice, the content is, "I really like you," but the message is, "I don't like you at all."
Hmm.
What we discovered in advertising is that it's quite a bit more complex than that. For example, advertisers really discovered this sometime in the 60s. There was a shift in the way that advertising took place. And what they discovered is that a far more powerful way to communicate with people was to use images rather than words. And the main reason was images are processed primarily in the right hemisphere of the brain, and words, written words, are processed primarily in the left hemisphere of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that matters is the left hemisphere of the brain processes information in linear, sequential, logical, abstract, rational ways, whereas the right hemisphere of the brain processes information in intuitive, holistic, and experiential ways. So the simplest way to say this is that an essay invites argument, an image invites experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to sell something, the last thing you want to do is invite an argument. You simply want to provide an experience. And so advertising in the 50s went from this sort of logical, didactic teaching about how you should buy this product and what the actual features and benefits are and how that's going to make your life a whole lot better. And it was long copy and lots of words. It shifted from that to simply big, powerful imagery with simple headlines that invited you into an emotional experience.
Yes, yes. Well, I want to explore just how that affects then the way that we process that information. You say that there's, you know, obviously pros and also some fairly big cons with some of those things. And we're going to explore just where this went in terms of television, the internet, printing, etc. in just a few moments. Just a little bit more on this notion of the medium shapes the message. Another statement would be Marshall McLuhan's other phrase, we shape our tools and afterwards our tools shape us. And you've got some wonderful exploration there of just some modern inventions that actually have kind of shaped us a little bit. Just really briefly, I'll give you the invention. You can tell me the way that it's actually shaped us in ways that we probably don't even understand. Calculators.
Well, calculators, of course, essentially gave a lobotomy to some part of our brain. So the whole process and practice of memorizing mathematical formulas is no longer necessary because we have these calculators. And the reason that matters remotely is not because of the content, but because of the way it makes the brain think. So, for example, the fact that I had to learn how mathematics worked and the fact that I was responsible for making those calculations in my brain shaped my brain in a particular way that people who never have to learn that aren't shaped as.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Whether that's useful or not is something we can all debate based on whether the world needs that kind of thinking. But that's sort of one of the points, is less about what you're actually doing and more about how the brain functions when it does it. It develops capacities that you wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah, definitely the tool has shaped us as well. Printing and literacy, you say that also has had a pro and a con, just briefly.
Yeah, boy, that one is, you could write entire, well, many volumes have been written on that one. The first, with printing and or writing, is that it is the first technology to separate the knower from what is known.
Uh-huh.
So, prior to the ability to fix ideas in time and space on a piece of paper, the only way that you could know what I was thinking is if you and I were in the same room together and we were interacting in an oral communication.
Yep.
The knower and what is known is intimately connected together. They're inextricable. With writing, I can now fix something outside of myself, and now it's fixed in time and space, and I don't have to be present. So in a book, somebody can know what I know without ever knowing me.
Mm.
Now, the advantage, the gift that writing gave was that it gave us distance from our thoughts and feelings. And one of the things that does is it actually allows us to cool our emotions. So that if there's a really heated debate, you can actually step back and gain distance from yourself by journaling or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and it calms you down and you're able to enter more carefully, to be able to act without reacting. The danger with writing is that it gives the illusion that you can actually be a purely objective being.
Mm-hmm.
Because you separate yourself from what is known, you begin to believe there is this thing out there called absolute objectivity, and you lose some of the humility that subjectivity gives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the mobile phone.
I have a friend who has a very interesting statement. Reed Mercer Shushart made this observation, which I thought was very interesting. He says, the cell phone is the new cigarette. both cost about 10 cents a minute. Both arguably cause cancer. Both fit in your pocket. Both are a part of an oral fixation. Both are social lubricant. Both are being outlawed in restaurants, and so on and so forth. The cell phone's a very, very complex one, so I'll give you that simple answer for now.
That's great. It certainly proves the fact that we shape the tools and the tools shape us. This is Open House across the nation. Theopenhouse.net.au is where you'll find the podcast for our chat with Shane Hipps, author of Flickering Pixels. He was in advertising. Now he's a pastor. He's talking about this way that we shape tools that end up shaping us and how communication technologies actually shape our faith. I want to move to that aspect now too, because while we've talked about printing and literacy and calculators and how they end up shaping us as much as we've actually created them, you then say that technological influences not just shape our culture, but the way we actually believe, what we believe in God, how we believe in God, those kinds of things. Now, printing, television, internet, I want to focus on those three areas, which is what you do in the book. And I want to look at how this actually shaped faith over the centuries. Now, let's start with printing. The age of print began with when Gutenberg invented the printing press in the 15th century, and the most obvious impact on Christian faith was the ability to print the Bible and to distribute it en masse, something which those of us who are Christians are very, very thankful for when we can read our Bibles every single day. You also say, though, that it impacted the nature of Christian faith, this idea of the Bible being printed en masse. Explore that.
Yeah. One of the biggest shifts that took place was the Bible as a medium was a radical departure from the way that faith was transmitted prior to the printing press. Faith was transmitted primarily in the form of stained glass windows. That is how people had access to the stories and narratives of Scripture. Even the homilies that were preached were often preached in Latin, not in the language of the people. So even the sermons were these mystical words. They didn't really mean much. So the only content they really had access to, because of low literacy rates and no paper supplies, were these windows. And what it brought about was a very right-brained approach to faith, spirituality, and God, this very intuitive, holistic, experiential. The center of the worship experience was always eating, something very visceral and experiential. It wasn't so much about believing. It wasn't so much a cognition. It wasn't so much about doctrine. It was about the experience of ingesting God into your body, experiencing that grace. With the printing press, we moved faith from the right hemisphere of the brain to the left hemisphere of the brain, because the printed word is processed in the left hemisphere of the brain. And so when that becomes the dominant way that people communicate, faith becomes this very abstract thing. It's something you actually believe in. There is a set of doctrines that matter. There's an order to those doctrines. There's a sequence to belief. And all of those things matter. And in fact, increasingly what became important was less and less some experience. In fact, there was suspicion around experience and feelings. They became a danger, a threat. What was most important was reason, linear, sequential, abstract reasoning. And so much of the Protestant Christian faith was a direct result of the printing press, and much of Protestant Christianity was born in a very abstract, propositional, doctrinal perspective.
That's very interesting. Of course, the Bible includes stories, word pictures, poetry, a lot of word-based imagery, though. Where does that fit in? Wouldn't that still have appeal to the right-hand side of the brain?
Undoubtedly has great appeal. But what happens is when a culture becomes so thoroughly shaped, this is independent of religion, it's just from 1500 to 1850 in the West, no new form of communication was introduced into a culture other than printing. So for nearly 500 years, we had this particular way of communicating entrenched in our brains. And as a consequence, our preferences began to move to the left hemisphere of the brain. As a consequence, what became most important, for example, to Luther in the New Testament was Paul and all the letters. What he had some disdain for, quite literally, he wished it wasn't even in the Bible, were the stories and parables of Jesus. These image-rich, concrete kind of right hemisphere approaches to faith, he did not appreciate, and most of the Western world had a suspicion and a lack of appreciation for that. So that's what's interesting, is that when the dominant communication system of any given culture is primarily a right hemisphere communication system, they will begin to prefer the stories and parables and imagery in the Bible, whereas if the dominant communication system is a left hemisphere a medium, they will begin to prefer the abstract doctrines of the Bible.
Shane Hipps is the author of Flickering Pixels, and he's with us on Open House right now. We're talking about the way that our technology, particularly our communication technologies, the printing press, television, internet, those kinds of things, shape the way we think and also what we believe and how we believe. Let's jump on to the other side of the brain then with television, because over the last few decades we've moved from that kind of predominantly, as you were saying, left-oriented kind of medium of printing, this word-based culture, I guess, if you want to put it that way, print-based culture, to an image-based culture, some would even say a moving image-based culture, with the invention of TV. Now, give me the effects of TV on the body and on culture.
Yeah, the effects are quite a bit more complex than I'm about to describe, but in the simplest sense, television created a return to the Middle Ages. Not quite that extreme, but there is a kind of a revival of the right brain approach to faith. And so what you'll begin to see is, particularly in a phenomenon that is known here, I don't know if it's known in Australia the same way, but the emerging church. Mm-hmm. Is that a term you're familiar with?
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
So it's kind of a new expression of Christianity that seems to be emerging, and so much of that expression of Christianity is a direct consequence of the shift towards an image-based culture, because at the center of what the emerging church has been trying to recover is a deep appreciation for experience, community, for relationship, for intuition. At the center of their theological shift is a move away from Paul and Romans to Jesus and the Sermon on the Mount. Again, this very concrete, earthy, ethical way of being rather than abstract doctrinal belief system. And so there's this shift from what you might call believing to following. And that is a direct consequence of a shift in the hemisphere of the brain where the dominant culture begins to communicate differently. We become what we behold, and we start to imagine God and faith in new ways. Now, the fascinating thing to me is that much of the what I would call the conservative evangelical subculture and the what you might call the new emerging church, they are very much at odds with one another, and they feel that one another is quite a threat to the other. What's fascinating is neither of them seems to be able to see that they are merely the product of a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere approach to faith. And if they could learn that the brain finds natural ecology within our heads, that there might actually be a natural ecology between these two things that appear so opposing.
Yeah, because TV actually has physiological effects on us as well, doesn't it? As much as the printing press, you know, changed the way we think. I mean, TV actually, I mean, the name of your book is Flickering Pixels. I mean, those flickering pixels actually do stimulate our brains in particular ways.
Sure. Well, frankly, everything does. If you read a tremendous amount, it will have a neurological shift take place in your brain. If you watch a lot of television, which is essentially the medium itself is simply a flickering mosaic of pixelated light, it actually repatterns neural pathways in the brain. Nearly everything we consume, whatever the habit is, if you build the habit long enough, new neural pathways begin to form in the brain.
Yeah, I mean, there's also been a lot of conversation about the way that TV has reduced our ability to concentrate and our attention spans as well.
Yes, absolutely. In general, television reduces capacity for abstract thought and raises our preference for emotion and experience.
The third medium I want to explore is this amazing invention we've had only in the last couple of decades, and that is, of course, the internet and the way that it's also changing the way we live, we think, we relate. How is it also changing our approach to faith matters?
Well, the thing that's so challenging when you start talking about the internet is the internet is not a medium. It is a medium reflecting a medium reflecting a medium reflecting a medium reflecting a medium. It is, in a sense, a container of nearly 5,000 years of media innovation. It is the convergence of nearly everything all at once. And as a consequence, to try and describe its effect is a little bit like trying to step into a hall of mirrors and describe reflection from reality. It's extremely difficult to do. Well, in a very, very broad strokes, what I can say, though, is the internet has a kind of what you might call an extremely polarizing effect, meaning it has both extraordinary capacity for gift and extraordinary capacity for ill. It's still too early for anyone to say what the impact of the internet is. It'll actually take a little time, but I think we're beginning to see kind of the nascent emergence of what's happening. Two things are happening. One is greater and greater degrees of fragmentation. People are becoming more and more entrenched in their own worldview. As strange as that sounds, you would think that you'd be exposed to more and more ideas. What people are finding is they're actually finding more and more what you might call ideological ghettos. Mm-hmm. So if you're a liberal, you might only look at liberal blogs or liberal websites, and you begin to kind of get entrenched more deeply in whatever that is. Or if you're a Christian or a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Nazi or whatever, you end up in that kind of ghetto. Mm. There is an opposite effect that also seems to be happening. And no one knows why one happens and the other doesn't. And that is what I would call the beginning of the dawn of maybe what you might call the integral age, meaning there is now the possibility, because of this extraordinary web-like net medium, to help people see the interconnectedness of everything. And as a consequence, they are less likely to entrench in one hemisphere of the brain or the other. They're beginning to be able to see that, hey, wait a minute, maybe the right and the left hemisphere of the brain, maybe this reason versus experience are not opposed but complementary.
Yeah, okay. And how has the digital era affected the way that we approach the Bible? We've talked about that for print and also television. How has the internet changed the way that we look at the Bible, engage with the Bible?
The Bible becomes really dismantled in many ways. The Bible, as we currently understand it in the West, is primarily a set of books. And what the internet and the digital age are capable of doing is essentially dismantling the books into a collection of verses that you can hyperlink to however you want in whatever fashion you want. And so some of the narrative flow and structure of the scriptures are being lost, as well as people's capacity to sit through large blocks of scripture. Because of our attention span, because of our declining literacy rates, because of the transformation of our kind of literacy. So from the print age to the digital age, we're not losing literacy, we're transforming literacy. So we go from what we might call a book-based literacy to a text-based literacy. And text-based literacy is, by its nature, because of Twitter and text messaging, highly efficient, very pithy, extremely short. And so the mind begins to lose its capacity for sustained reading and reasoning. And so what you get are kind of a mosaic of ideas. You're still reading, but you're now reading in almost a right hemisphere kind of way.
Shane, that's been a fascinating exploration of just those three main media, print, television, and the internet, and obviously the pros and cons that come with each one. Straight away, we've got this polarization, left-hand side of the brain, right-hand side of the brain, parts of the Bible versus other parts of the Bible. How do we bring this together? Nobody who's a Christian says we should be fighting Paul and Jesus, or you know, the Gospels and then the Pauline letters. How do we bring this together, recognizing that we are so shaped by the media that we consume?
Yeah, I think, honestly, candidly, that's the starting point. One of the reasons that we fight so vehemently is that we think we've discovered the truth, that we've somehow independently arrived at this thing called the truth. And the reality is we are looking at the truth through a set of lenses. And so our preferences and our expectations and all those things are shaped by the very media we're using to argue our points. And I think if people could step back just long enough to see that you are either shaped by a very image-based set of biases or a very text-based set of biases, you might have the humility to enter a conversation rather than the arrogance to simply fight.
What do you think churches can do then to actually be people, and Christians in general, to actually be people who don't polarize left and right brain, parts of the Bible versus other parts of the Bible?
Boy. Other than understanding the way that we are shaped by our media, which are part of what's causing these difficulties, I am constantly in conversation with people who vehemently disagree with me on theology or whatever. You know, there's a tremendous amount of polarization that's happening in the Christian church right now. Mm. And increasingly, I think the one thing I desperately hope people will bring to their beliefs is what I call a kind of an odd combination of daring humility, which is to say, I believe very, very firmly, radically committed to a particular belief, and an awareness that I could be wrong. And those two things are really hard to hold in tension, but I think they're the beginning of wisdom.
Yes.
And the more we're capable of genuinely saying, I believe this with my whole heart, and I could be wrong, the more capable we are of entering dialogue rather than debate.
Do you think there is a best way to communicate? You know, I always think about the Christian story of God becoming flesh and visiting us in person. He didn't just send us a letter. There's Christian notion of the incarnation. You know, I mean, I guess the ultimate message is really in person.
Yes. I think this is when you think about the digital age, one of the major biases of the digital age is actually disembodiment.
Yeah.
An increasing capacity for us to become electronic nomads, digitally glancing off one another in this ethereal space. And you're absolutely right. There's a reason that God didn't send Jesus as an ethereal spirit. He sent flesh and blood to be hands and feet. And there's a reason that Paul says you are to be the body of Christ, not the mind of Christ, but the body of Christ. And so it seems to me that a major part of this is how the church can become the hands and feet. And so this whole idea that when people say Christians are a bunch of hypocrites, and Christians will often respond by saying, well, yeah, you're right, don't pay any attention to Christians, pay attention to Jesus. And my answer is, you can't do that. You as Christians are the message. So either you have the integrity to admit your hypocrisy or your honesty, but you cannot save Jesus from the church. As the church, you are representatives of the message, how you behave, how you deal with conflict, how you handle disagreement. Those are the message, independent of what you say. So to, you know, coin St. Francis, of course, he says, preach the gospel always, and when necessary, use words.
Yeah. Shane, fascinating to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time over this last 25 minutes or so.
Thank you. It was so great to be with you.
Yeah, Shane Hipps, who was in advertising, selling Porsches for years, and now is a pastor. He's written this fascinating book called Flickering Pixels, about the way that our technology, whether it be printing or television, the internet, whatever, actually shapes the way that we think and indeed the way we believe.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.